work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet. Hear from regional and national guests, find out about upcoming events, and learn how to keep yourself and your family well. Tune in each week from 6 to 7 on Monday evenings or listen anytime at kkfi.org/podcasts.
Hi, this is Jen Zaman, and you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Terry. Today, host David Bell will interview Kansas City visual artist Harold Smith. Mr. Smith uses his talents to convey Black history through the arts. Mr. Smith put it best when he stated, "If a person wants to know what happened, read a history book. If they want to know how it affected people, look at the artwork. This adds to the importance of Black art throughout the history. It's like hieroglyphics." We will air our calendar at the middle of the hour. Please stay tuned. We hope you will listen. Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are. Now, our show.
I recall a murder case from about 15 years ago. My client had confessed to anyone that would listen, and we had to plead guilty. And the question was sentencing. There was a young Black man, a teenager, going to sentencing that indicated he wanted to be an artist. And I recall I commissioned him to draw a picture of what he saw during the sentencing. No direction, no restriction. That picture still hangs on my wall today, a poster-sized drawing. And the first thing you'll notice are the outline of eyelids. The picture is literally from the artist's eyes looking out. And even though my client had confessed a number of times, and even though we received what I believe to be a fair sentence, the artist's perspective was fascinating. In the center of the picture, right in front of the bench, the artist had drawn my client hanging from a noose. The faces of the judge, the court reporter, and the bailiffs were all frighteningly evil. His take has always signified the power of art to me, on the person producing the art and on the person viewing the art. A few months ago, I came across a friend of a friend on Facebook, Harold Smith, artist, teacher, visual historian. I am drawn to his art. And frankly, my desire to interview him for this program is based upon my desire to understand why. What is so powerful about his work, and why does it have such an impact on me? And with that, we welcome Harold Smith to our show. Harold, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. Could you give us just a little bit of background about yourself, where you were born, maybe where you were educated, particularly in art, but I know also you have other endeavors.
Yes, I was born here in Kansas City, Kansas. Graduated from Wyandotte High School, got an associate's in data processing at Kansas City, Kansas Community College, a bachelor's of computer science at Union College in Lincoln, Nebraska, and then later on a master of arts in teaching at Webster University. I'm a self-taught artist. The last art class I took was art appreciation in college, and before that was maybe eighth grade drawing, but I've always drawn and painted and sculpted on my own.
And, you know, by the way, today this is a radio program, but we're dealing with someone who's a visual artist. And so if people want to kind of surf the web to see more of your paintings as we talk today, where would you have them go?
I would say go to my website, haroldsmithart.com. And then from there, you can find a link to my Facebook page or Instagram, Harold Smith Art on Instagram and Facebook, not on Twitter, though.
Where are you currently teaching here?
I currently teach at Lincoln Middle School, Lincoln, the official name, Lincoln College Preparatory Middle School.
You know, when I was talking to you about this and about where you're teaching, you brought up, you said when students get in trouble, you indicated to me that they can use what's called a buddy room. And when they come in, if you're that person that they go to, that you give them a canvas and paint and instructions to, quote, work it out. What does work it out mean to you, Harold?
Okay. Well, usually it'll be like some paper and some paint. But just work it out means, you know, try to express those emotions that, you can't express in words, you know, or if you expressed in words, you'd probably get suspended, you know. You know, kind of like a safe space for just, you know, expressing those emotions that we all feel.
Yeah. It seems to me there's something more in what they're going to be able to express. There's something more in terms of the visual art than they would otherwise be able to put into words, something deeper, something more meaningful to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Feelings, thoughts, just their feelings, how they're feeling at that moment, and, you know, which can be a culmination of many, many things, not just in school, you know.
There's a quote that I was reading about you, a quote that struck me. You said, "I believe that creativity is the child of want, the emotion-rich blood of humanity's deep need to simply belong flows through creativity's veins."
Yeah, I've seen that. I don't know if I wrote that quote, though.
Oh, you didn't write? Okay. Well, I it was attributed to you, but it's a wonderful a wonderful quote.
I'm getting older. I wrote it.
Well, in any event, is that something you hold true to today or that you believe to be true today?
Yeah, a lot of creativity comes from a place of want, wanting to belong, wanting to be accepted, wanting to be present. Yes.
Another, you know, and I asked you, I said, why is it that you, why do you paint? Do you remember what your answer was to me?
Not quite sure.
It was, I really don't think I have a philosophy of art or painting. I just like to paint.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. I remember telling that to Alice Thorson about 10 years ago also when I had an exhibit at the Jazz Museum. But, you know, over the years, as I thought about it, I do have a philosophy. I just probably at the time just didn't know how to put it into words.
Yeah. Well, one of the words I did see you put it into is you said, "I think it's all about a desire to get it out of my soul and connect."
Yeah.
And I was wondering, what is it you're trying to get out of your soul and what is it you're trying to connect to?
Oh, well, I would say my experience as a human being that happens to be Black, that happens to be male, and that happens to be living in a world that struggles to not demonize people based on their skin color. I think that's a part of it. And, you know, experiences from way back that demonstrated that. Growing up, my dad was born in 1917, my mom in 1923. They were older when I was born, but they had experienced all of that. And then, of course, being their child, I mean, it also impacted me, not just by the things they said and did, but just how they lived their life after underneath those conditions, just trying to get that all out, you know, and express it.
Is there something about the process of taking it from inside and making it visible to the senses, in this case, visual art, does that process itself, and we'll talk about the result of it, but does that process itself, is that cathartic? Is that how you would describe it? Is it something more than that to the artist?
Yeah, I would say on the best days it's cathartic, but there's actually times when it can actually increase anxiety and tension also.
Why is that?
Think about things that may be traumatic or traumatized your parents, and you know, we resulted with what they call trickle down trauma. You know, some of the things I think about when I'm working, you know, are not exactly pleasant or painful. So, you know, there are times when at the end of working, I may feel worse or more tension and anxiety than I did before I began. But, you know, that's just a part of the process, you know, it's just part of life.
Another quote that I have from you is that Black artists are anointed with the divine task of reclaiming and expressing our true narrative.
Yeah.
Help me understand that.
Okay. Well, you know, we live in an age of alternate facts and all that carrying on, and if you were to watch the news on one network and then switch over to another network, you're going to get a completely different version. But in the midst of all of that, the narrative of being Black in America has been highly distorted by many. As we have seen, actually, frankly, since 2016, we've seen just how many people really have this depraved narrative of what it means to be Black in America. But I think with our art, I mean, by expressing our feelings and our experiences and our representations, what we're doing is we kind of have a task to show the world that this is what Blackness really is. You know, it's not all a bunch of guys in hoodies running around trying to cause problems. No, we get up, we go to work, we pay our bills, we pay our taxes. We think about retirement. We love our kids and grandkids. You know, we want what is right for the world. And I think that we do because so much of it has been buried. I think the Black artist does have a calling and anointing to show the world truth of Blackness. Yeah.
One of the works that you've done is called, titled Friday Night Blues.
Yes.
I know, again, we're on the radio and I do want people to go to haroldsmithart.com to see this, but could you briefly describe what it is that we're looking at with that and what you intended to capture with that?
Well, when you look at the image, you'll see, you know, two Black guys, African-American males, look like they might be at a bar or a club or the cigar box or someplace. Guy's playing chess. He's got I think it was a Colt 45, maybe a pack of Newports. And, you know, it's just like, you know, Friday night, you know, especially as I get older, you know, I used to get together with friends and just hang out and chill and talk about life. And of course, when we were younger, a lot more optimistic. But now when we get together, you know, one of the things we realize that the world really hasn't changed that much in the last 30 years since we all graduated from college and high school. And actually that work will be exhibited at the Nelson Atkins in an upcoming exhibit where the African-American collective will be exhibiting at the Nelson Atkins starting in June, an exhibit that will run for almost a year. And what is really beautiful about this to me is that many of the artists in the show, this is their first time exhibiting, many of them. And their first time exhibiting, and they're actually in a major museum. So I hope I didn't jump ahead by saying that. But
No,
that's work in there.
I will look forward to going that. Looking at this, the Friday Night Blues, there isn't that what I'll call the stare. And that stare appears in many of your works. And you described to me when you and I met about it. It's like, I wouldn't say despondent or sorrow, but it's just maybe spent. I think it's, I forgot the exact words you used to describe it. Maybe you could help me with that.
I think it's just that the look of being Black, being male, being older in America, where you just kind of, you know, you just, I don't know, maybe emotionally exhausted to a degree, or just shell-shocked, traumatized. You know, shell-shocked or traumatized, maybe. Yeah. A lot of people I know, a lot of guys I grew up with, that's kind of how they feel nowadays. Shell-shocked and traumatized. I had an interesting discussion the other day. Forget this. And we were talking about a guy got a felony conviction for having a small amount of marijuana. Felony conviction. Going to jail. Meanwhile, most of the people who attempted to overtake the Capitol, it looks like I'm seeing more and more of them charged with misdemeanors.
Yeah.
We're talking about how can you attempt a coup, which would be called treason, and they're just going to charge you with a misdemeanor? But then again, let's say those were Black Lives Matters protesters. You can guarantee they would have been a lot more people killed, and everyone in there would have been charged with heavy felonies. So we were kind of talking about that. And, you know, that's those type of thoughts lead to that type of a look where you're like, yeah, what next? You know,
mm-hmm. You know, I was in you personally dealing with this, in addition to the expressing yourself in art, you talk about you trying to center yourself every morning. And I was wondering if you could briefly share your routine as to what you do in the morning to try to, yeah. to put yourself back on center, because, you know, by the end of the day, by the end of the week, their chances are you're going to be, the forces are going to be pushing you off center.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I get up at 4 a.m, believe it or not. I have to be at work at 6:50, and after decades of getting up at 4 to be at work, I probably always wake at 4, but I don't, before I watch the news, before I get on social media, before I check my email, I listen to a playlist of gospel songs by James Cleveland. I've been doing that for decades. Every morning, the same playlist. But I started out back with cassette, and then, you know, now it's all on the computer. But I listen to that and I meditate. I try to take at least 15, 20 minutes to just not think about anything, to just flush my mind and get clarity. And then I try to get on the treadmill. I know it don't look like it, but I try to get on the treadmill at least 30 minutes a day. And a couple days a week, I'll go in the basement and lift some weights. But yeah, it's all about centering physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. You know, I think, you know, self-care is a, you know, especially for people of color, self-care is a militant act. It's almost like activism, because everything in this society tells us not to care for ourselves.
I was one of the songs that you said you listened to from Reverend James Cleveland was "I Don't Feel No Ways Tired."
Oh yeah,
and I didn't know who Reverend James Cleveland was, and I didn't know that song, and so I went and listened to it. Mm-hmm. And it was beautiful, and what was so fascinating for me is as the choir moves through the title of the song, at least the version I heard, there's a rush of energy as we go to "No Ways Tired." That it's almost as if, in my visualization of it, trying to break free or trying to move to a higher ground in a way.
It is, yeah. I agree. No way.
It says I've come too far from where I started. That's Nobody right. told me the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with
what,
that.
What is it in terms of how your art is made, or how you express yourself in there? The spiritual component, or is that just so interwoven with the Black experience that it's in everything you do, whether it's readily apparent or not?
Yeah, I think it's interwoven with the Black experience, because, you know, for so many of us, faith was a big part of how we were raised, because that's all our parents and grandparents had. It's like that rapper that was funeralized yesterday, DMX. You know, he's a hardcore rapper with a lot of truth, but at the same time, there's videos of him online practically preaching to people. In fact, I think last summer, in the midst of the pandemic, he did an Instagram where he basically just prayed, and people still pass it around. It's a part of that experience, you know. It's a part of the Black experience in America, is seeking faith, seeking spiritual strength, seeking strength beyond yourself, because we really are facing some. I just saw it on the news this morning. The officer shot and killed a guy. The guy was actually calling 911. Mm-hmm. They shot the man that called 911 because they mistook, and I put it in quotation marks, they mistook the phone for a gun. Now, a phone up to your ear. You know, it's just, so when we live in this experience where this stuff is constantly happening, and we know, you know, today, tomorrow, it could be me. You know, I could be at the gas station pumping gas and end up getting shot because somebody saw a glimmer of light, a reflection off the gas pump, and thought it was a gun. I mean, so with that, we part of our experience is to look beyond ourselves for spiritual help and guidance. and protection. And protection.
Look at one of the
George Floyd, as he was dying, he was crawling out for his mother, who was deceased. So even in his dying breath, he was moving towards some type of a spirituality. But go ahead.
You know, one of the pieces that seems to, like, next step in our conversation, it would be the mourning. If you could briefly describe it, and also when did you paint the mourning?
Yeah, the mourning. Is that the one with the man in the casket?
It is, and the mother and two daughters.
Yes, yes. I believe actually that was a digital work I made, I believe. Okay. But yeah, it was just, I think I made that one maybe in 2020 or 2019. But, you know, it was just reflecting on this constant narrative is played out, unarmed black men dead. And you know what? When the headlines are over and when the news stories are over, we really forget there are wives and girlfriends and children and mothers that have to wake up every day with that loss after we have moved on, you know, basically, and we've moved on to the next headline. They're still living in that grief. And that's kind of, I believe, where that came from. The more
you leave the faces blank. And I wonder if that's so that we all can put our own, either our own faces there or faces of loved ones there, so that we can experience some of that mourning, the mourning.
Exactly. I believe so. Yeah. I've done a lot of series with the faces blank for that reason. Yes.
One of the other works that I know that was striking to me was entitled Arm of Democracy.
Yeah.
And it was one of a series of early works in which you, mm-hmm. I guess, confront American life fragmented with problems. Mm-hmm. What, if you could briefly describe Arm of Democracy, what it presents, and then we'll talk about the meaning of it.
Mm-hmm. Arm of Democracy has an American has an arm made out of an American flag grabbing a black man by the throat. And what was interesting about that work is that it was in a exhibit called Red, White, and Black in 2001 at the Kansas City, Kansas Public Library. And it ended up being newsworthy because there are several works I made that used parts of the American flag, not a real flag. It was like a facsimile flag from Walmart and a plastic or vinyl flag from Walmart. And people complained. They tried to get the library to take the exhibit down. And the library actually refused to take the exhibit down.
What is it that painting reflects black experience? What is it that is so threatening in your mind to white people to see that, to complain about maybe the use of a flag in a situation where the meaning of it is how the black community is treated overall by the society that holds the flag up as its emblem?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's just like some people, some white people that, you know, you mentioned just three words, Black Lives Matter, and the hair just seems to raise up on the back of their neck. They're just threatened immediately. I think it's just internalized racism. Anything that seeks to show seeks to express the pain of our experience, a lot of people take offense to it. They feel like it's aimed at them. It's just interesting. You know, people have a problem with that, the flag, but heck, Kid Rock gets up there wearing the flag on a hat, on his pants. You know, it's just so interesting. It's like, it's just, I don't know. I know that people are threatened by that stuff. There's this knee-jerk reaction of anger. Back when that happened, I had a couple people threaten me, you know, they were going to come by my house. They called, left crazy messages. Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know. I mean, I think it's just that internalized racism talking to them.
Almost to me seems like a magnet to pull it out. But we are talking to Harold Smith today on Jaws of Justice. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about his work, particularly in the area of expressing the black experience within the criminal justice system. You're listening to Jaws of Justice on 90.1 KKFI.
Thank you.
April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and KKFI and MOXA have partnered to bring you these stories. This is a portion of a longer tale. Complete stories can be found at kkfi.org/MOXA Story Share.
This is MOXA's Story Share Project, a collection of stories from people who are striving for a community free from sexual assault and abuse. The theme for this project is My Moment, Our Momentum. Listen now to this moment.
My name is Kelsey Saragnese, and I work at the Metropolitan Organization to Counter Sexual Assault. I work at MOXA, but I work in our education and prevention team. So I work on all of our prevention programs with middle and high school students. And last year, I had the opportunity to work with two high school seniors from a school in Kansas who were really passionate and really fired up about preventing sexual violence and supporting survivors of sexual assault. And so they started researching laws and policies and learning what the actual laws were in Kansas around sexual violence and what rights they had. And they decided that they were going to use all of the knowledge and the research that they put together and go to Topeka and go to the Capitol. And so they created this incredible one-pager of their policy priorities. And we spent the day in the Capitol talking to stakeholders in their community about the changes that they wanted to see happen. And I can't imagine doing that when I was 17. Not even being old enough to vote, but knowing that you get to have a say in the political process, and that's the momentum that I'm trying to follow.
Thank you for listening to MOXA's Story Share. With your help, we can change our culture to one where survivors are believed, perpetrators are held accountable, and our community is safer. If you would like to get involved or need support, please go to moxa.org or call us at 816-531-0233 anytime, 24 hours a day.
Now the calendar for the week of April 26th. In compliance with Mayor Lucas' emergency order, please ensure necessary public health measures remain in place. Please continue to wear masks and social distance. See the facts at kcmo.gov. If you're behind on your mortgage, Legal Aid of Western Missouri may be able to help low-income residents of Jackson County with free legal advice and services. You can give them a call, 816-474-6750. You can check to register for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America meetings this week at momsdemandaction.org. Monday Meets is 4 p.m., an online event hosted by the Willow Domestic Violence Center, open to everyone on Facebook Live. Monday, April 26th at noon, No More Excuses Coalition meeting at the Mohart Center Auditorium, 3200 Wayne, Kansas City, Missouri. No Excuses Coalition will meet every first and fourth Monday of each month. Monday, April 26th, online, join Missourians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty online via Twitter as we await opening arguments in the trial of Eric Lawson in St. Louis. Accused in murders, Mr. Lawson has been held pretrial at the CJC for over 9 years. This is the second attempt of the Attorney General and preceding judges to obtain a death-qualified jury and potential death sentence for Mr. Lawson. Make sure to follow Missourians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty and tag them on Twitter at MADPMO. Tuesday, April 27th, 6 p.m., online, join the Community Remembrance Project of Missouri, the Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey, and the UMKC Carolyn Benton Koch Fair Chair for an online lecture with Brian Stevenson, founder of Equal Justice Initiative. Brian Stevenson is a widely acclaimed public interest lawyer dedicated to providing help to the poor, incarcerated, and condemned. More info at rockhurst.edu. Friday, April 30, 11 a.m., the Smart Sentencing Coalition call is at empowermissouri.org. Saturday, May 1st, 1 p.m., Veronica's Voice is having volunteer appreciation at the beautiful Lavender Hill Farm. More info at veronicasvoice.org. Saturday, May 1st, 9 a.m., Criminal Justice Reform, Alternatives to Incarcerating Our Youth is a 9 a.m. online event with the League of Women Voters, Johnson County, Kansas. In 2019, the Johnson County District Attorney's Office filed 1,500 cases against juvenile offenders ages 10 to 17. More info on Facebook. Saturday, May 1st, 10 a.m., May Day Rally to Pass the PRO Act is a rally at Ilis Davis Park, Kansas City, Missouri. The PRO Act protects workers. A list of services, meals, and hotlines are available at lawrenceprogressivecalendar.blogspot.com. That list is updated daily. Please take care of yourselves and others. The COVID-19 pandemic has brought into sharp focus the need for health care reforms that promote universal access to affordable care. COVID-19 has devastated the U.S. prison and jail population. My name is Terry, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We want to thank our engineer today, Stan Thomas. Now, we return to our show, David Bell speaking with Harold D. Smith, Jr.
Welcome back. You're listening to Jaws of Justice on 90.1 KKFI. I'm here with Harold Smith, visual artist. We talked the first hour kind of a little bit about background, about his art, what he's trying to reflect in it. And this part of the hour, we're going to talk about some additional works and how the Black experience, particularly in the criminal justice system and in society in general, are reflected in his art. I first wanted to read a quote, Harold, from you, and it said, "If a person wants to know what happened, read a history book. If they want to know how it affected people, look at the artwork. Mm-hmm. This adds to the importance of Black art throughout history. It is like hieroglyphics."
Yep.
It's such a powerful statement. When I read that, I'm thinking of the trial that we just saw. Yep. And I'm thinking of the video. But at the same time, I'm thinking the art, as you reflect, as you painted it, is as powerful or more powerful than the video. And I'm trying to understand that in my mind as to why that is.
Mm-hmm. I think art, just like I've said before, it touches parts of the human psyche that can't be touched by photographs. I mean, let's take Jacob Lawrence, for example. There are plenty of photographs of the Great Migration of African-Americans moving from the South to the North to escape. But then you look at his work, the painting, the series that Jacob Lawrence made, the Migration series, and it has a whole different impact because it's like his choice of colors and shapes really encapsulate the sense of hope mingled with struggle that was experienced back then. And it's just honestly the effect of art. It's really hard for me even to put it into words, even as an artist.
One of the series that you did was you had titled Black on Black.
Yes.
And you described it as a piece or about the invisibility of men of color in the community. Yeah. And in this case, from what you've indicated in prior works, you said you're letting Blackness define itself, mm-hmm. instead of expecting Black men to be defined by white standards.
Yeah.
What does it mean to let Blackness define itself?
Well, let Black experiences be defined by the Black experience. Okay. You know, when guys started sagging jeans, showing, you know, a little bit of the underwear, there was this huge pushback. In fact, some cities even passed laws to make sagging illegal. And it was a big uproar over it. But, you know, it was a fashion statement. And, you know, the only reason it became demonized was because white kids weren't doing it. Then once white kids started sagging, no more complaints. It's just, and I'll give you another example. Let's talk about Trayvon Martin. I've heard white people say, well, if Trayvon would have stopped and talk to George Zimmerman, then this could have all worked out. Nobody had to die. And what they're evaluating is if you're walking down the neighborhood where you belong and somebody pulls up and asks you what you're doing here, that's an entirely different experience for a young black male than it is for a young white male. Because young white males are not constantly being questioned and demonized. You take a young black male who has went through an entire life of all of this foolishness, of course, his response may not be, oh, yes, sir, let's talk. His response is probably, man, just leave me alone. Because he, first of all, he knows his rights. And that's what I'm saying. A lot of one of the big problems I find, is even with the so-called liberal community, is they look at things that black people go through, and they try to give this opinion on what should or should not have been done based on their experience, instead of looking at it through the black experience. So when I made these artworks, there's a couple things. Number one, I knew they're hard to see, really, even if you have one right in front of you, because it's black on black. It can be hard to make out the features, hard to make out what's actually there in the art. It's nearly impossible to photograph, you know. And I say that, and I'm glad for that, and that was part of the intent, because I wanted to show white people this is what it's like when you try to define, when you try to understand the black experience. It's hard to see because you're not part of it. And even in the so-called recordings, you know, and photos and videos of things black people go through, if you're looking at it through white eyes, you're not really going to see what's going on. The only way you can really see what's going on if you see it as a person of color.
In looking at one of the works, it's called The Five, Can You See Me Now? And it's an all-black painting, as you talked about, but there is traces of five different men's faces scattered on the surface. Mm-hmm. And it's a reference, I think, to Central Park Five.
Yes, sir.
A teenager in there. And I will tell you, in seeing it, and I've only seen it on a screen, a digital screen, you can't look past it quickly. If you want to experience it, you have to sit there, mm-hmm. and you have to look at it, and you have to, with intentionality, focus on what is trying to be presented there.
Exactly. And
was that your point, at least as to someone trying to understand the best they can the black experience without being black?
Exactly. Yeah, you got to stop. You got to get close. You got to get close. You know, you got to look. Yeah. Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah.
If as we're talking about this, again, we're talking about visual art on the radio. If mm-hmm. people want to look at some of your work while they're listening, where can they go?
Go to haroldsmithart.com. Then you can follow the link. There's a link to my Facebook page. There's a lot of work up there. There's some work up on Instagram. Or better yet, just Google Harold Smith Art, and then you'll find images from past shows, past exhibits. So that's probably the easiest thing, is just Google Harold Smith Art and click on images, and then you'll see plenty of work.
As I was looking over your art, and particularly at art speaking of the black experience from the criminal justice system, I came across a painting that's untitled. And the description of it is it appears to be a young man in a blue suit, appears to be almost at a funeral, mm-hmm. and you have a five or six individuals behind him looking out at the viewer, also looking at the body. Mm-hmm. And there's one face in particular that's defined, the others are blank. You could briefly talk about that work, and if you recall when you did it, and maybe a little bit of insight as we look at the various images that are presented.
Mm-hmm. That particular work was made in 2019, I believe. I know exactly which one you're talking about. And it was just pointing out, you know, that when people of color are victimized, maybe even slain unlawfully, unrighteously, that there is a real residual impact on the lives of other people individually. We see these police killings and they move along on the headlines and we forget about it and move on to the next thing. But, you know, there are families that are forever marked by this stuff. People, children are forever traumatized by this type of stuff. And it kind of spoke to that, the individuality of oppression. I'm just saying individuality of oppression.
One of the central focus for me, the individual whose face is defined, who's looking, who appears to be looking at the body, there's that stare again. Yeah. And again, slightly different than the one we talked about before, but there's some similarity there. And one of the descriptions I saw about your art is that we're not only looking at this individual's experience as he's facing the world, but it's also a stare back out at the viewer to know that we're being watched. Yeah. Or that we're being looked at to say, hey, you see this.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, when I was talking to Sonny Ruffin, I'd asked someone I could speak to about you, and you would give me Sonny Ruffin's number, and I spoke to her, and it was just a fascinating conversation. And one of the things she had reiterated is that she finds your activist art empowering, mm-hmm. that it allows individuals to engage in the depth of the story that you're telling through the imagery you use. And for all who view it, his work is important to the dimension of culture as a catalyst for change.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you believe that your work is a catalyst for change, and a change of what?
Yeah, well, I hope it is a catalyst for change. I hope, I pray it is. The change is for people to stop and rethink their views. Stop and rethink. I mean, that's the biggest thing, is that I posted a quote not too long ago and said that just because a person is born on the wrong side of history, like some of us, like some humans have been born receiving the benefits of white privilege and being programmed to believe that all these racist things, just because you're born on the wrong side of history doesn't mean you cannot live on the right side of history. You can change your views. You can change your perspective. You can come over. And I hope, and I would hope and think that art, looking at art and thinking about it on a deeper level than just, oh, that's nice, would make some people rethink who they are and what they are and their beliefs, and just, you know, try to come over to the right side of history where everybody's treated right. Yeah.
I wondered about that. There's no doubt for me in looking at art as a white person, looking at your art, mm-hmm. and, you know, we're all kind of a product of our own history, product of our own environment, but we all have certain social constructs that have absorbed. And one thing I would say about your art, at least, is to me, is it seems to cut through a lot of those, almost like a knife to get to something pure inside, whatever that is. But I also wondered if it was a catalyst for change within the Black community itself, meaning there's some value to whatever is inside being brought outside, as we talked in the beginning, and then allowing members of the Black community to see that, if that in and of itself can be empowering and a catalyst for change.
Yes. I think of Kerry James Marshall, who famous artist who talked about as a child growing up going to the museum, but he never saw Black people in any of the paintings, any of the artwork. It was all less, but even today, the vast majority of art in museums is by white men. Even women have been crapped on by collection practices of art institutions. Yes, I think it's empowering when you see, for Black people to see a painting of someone that looks like you with skin color like you. You know, it's ironic when you go to a museum, you look at religious art from the Renaissance or whatever, and you know, you look at the race of the people in the artworks made by Caravaggio or Leonardo da Vinci, and it doesn't line up with what people of the Middle East would have looked like, you know. But it's empowering to see work that, to see your people that look like you, immortalized in art, you know. Yes.
One of the other series that you worked on, as you presented, was called the Man of Color series. Mm-hmm. And there's striking colors in that, reds and blues that are the background with Black faces, not Black faces, but the African-American appears to be mostly men painted on those striking backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that. Tell me about the Man of Color series and what you were trying to portray with that.
Yes, the Man of Color series, I started into it, it's almost 20 years, it's an ongoing series, addresses the complexity of the Black and male experience. And sometimes within that complexity, we find things that go together, that combinations of color and line and shape that you would think don't work, but actually you put them together. And when you look at it as a whole, it does work. For example, you think of the rapper Tupac Shakur and everybody, old gangster rapper that got murdered in Las Vegas. What a lot of people don't realize is he went to what's the famous art school in New York City? But he was a dancer. That's how he started, as a dancer, learning ballet and things like that. People don't realize the complexity of Black masculinity, that, you know, the things, you know, Black men dance. There are Black men that do ballet, Black men that listen to classical music. There are Black men that like Leave It to Beaver and Gilligan's Island. And the complexity of the Black experience, and that's what it was about, the Man of Color series.
But you know, we go from the Black on Black, which is something you have to stand in front of and focus on to really kind of get an understanding of what's going on, to the Men of Color series, which is just, it's vibrancy, it's just color. You can't walk past it without noticing it. Right. And not to say that you shouldn't be standing there, you know, trying to understand what's going on, but at the same time, it attracts such attention. Mm-hmm. It seems like you're on two ends of a spectrum there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Why is that?
Oh, it's just how I do, how I create, you know. I know two ends of the, like the singer Prince, you know, he had some incredibly nasty songs, incredibly nasty, but then later in his career, he had a whole album, was it the Rainbow Children, which was about basically Jehovah Witnesses theology. So yeah, this is just hard to explain it, but it's just, you know, part of that complexity.
The last piece I wanted to talk to you about is actually not visual art, at least that you painted, but is rather about another type of visual art. And it's based on an article you wrote entitled "The Art of Black Hair Braiding."
Yeah.
And looking at braiding as an art. And what I found fascinating, it is that in this particular art, it arises from a creation and a maintaining of a special bond between a mother and a daughter, perhaps, or the artist and the canvas.
Yeah.
It seems such a unique type of art, at least as you've presented it. I can't think of anything else that comes close to it that it would arise in that type of setting. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, hair braiding, a lot of people don't realize that back in the times of slavery, the hair was braided. At one point, some people would braid the escape routes into the hair for the Underground Railroad. But yeah, it's a part of Black culture, getting your hair braided, mother, daughter, grandmother. I saw a beautiful picture of the grandmother braiding the mother while the mother's braiding the daughter's hair. And, it's just so interesting. What's even bizarre is that it wasn't until just like a year or two ago, in some states, it's considered unprofessional for Black people to wear their hair in its natural state. Imagine that. A law had to be passed so that people couldn't fire you for wearing your hair in a natural state. You know, they would want Black women to press their hair. So it's like, you know, a white person's hair. It's just bizarre. But yeah, but you know, it seems like almost everything Black people do is so artistic. Even Black preaching. You know, you listen to the Black preach, they call it hooping, when they do the moaning and groaning and vivid descriptions, just everything.
Just everything. Is that in response to the attempt to make Black community invisible? Is the vibrancy of color, the vibrancy of action, is it in response to that? It's saying, no, yeah. Not only are we not invisible, but we actually have to go farther to be seen, to be heard.
Yep, you nailed it. Yep, because there is this, you have nailed it.
You said one thing, you said, when people don't understand or appreciate an art form, they often make assumptions about the artists to justify their ignorance.
Yes, they do. Yeah, they do. They don't. They look at the work. I mean, you know, I some of the bizarrely rude comments I've had people over the years, people either say to me about my work or crazy messages people have sent. They don't understand it. They don't get it. So they attack. And that's one of the saddest things about, you know, one of the things that we see in race. You know, a lot of people will turn on the TV and they'll see black people doing something, and rather than investigate, they just demonize. But, you know, people are going to do what they're going to do. I mean, all we can try to do is do the best we can to make good and do good and be a force for good, but recognize there will always be those out here that are nothing more than a force for evil in our world.
Well, and going back to how we began, you talked about, you know, why you like to paint, or maybe not even like, why you need to paint. You said it was a desire to get it out of my soul and to connect. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if looking at art, whether visual art, whether music, whether braiding, hair braiding, if you look at it as part of someone's soul emerging to be seen, then it would seem that we would treat it with much more respect than otherwise occurring. It is something almost, it is sacred.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's something.
As we closed on today's show, I wanted to let everyone know you do have a few things coming. First of all, haroldsmithart.com is the place to go to kind of look at some of these images again. And I thought about this as we were going into it, Harold. I'm like, well, my goodness, we're talking a fascinating subject about visual art on the radio. So, but you can't capture in words your art. And so I highly recommend people go. But you do have some exhibits coming up as well.
Yeah.
I know there's the reparations exhibit. Could you briefly talk about that?
Yes, the reparations exhibit. Thank you. Will be at Natasha Rhea Elskari Gallery, Natasha Rhea Gallery, located in the Center for Spiritual Living on 39th Street. The reparations show has special pricing if you live east of Truce. If you don't live east of Truce, you're going to pay the full price. But if you live east of Truce, it's markedly lower because, you know, people that live east of Truce love art too and love original art too. But it's just my way of trying to help people that otherwise would not be able to collect original art acquire it. When you look at everything that's happened for black people, you know, we just don't have the disposable income that, you know, other races have, and all that goes back to slavery and racism. And, you know, a lot of artists make art about representation and they sell it for mega dollars, and that's fine. But then it goes into a collection of a person whose wealth has come from racism and slavery. It vanishes in their private collection, never to be seen again. And I mean, sometimes I wonder if that's really representation. To me, representation is getting art into the homes and on the walls of the people that I think would benefit most from it.
Harold Smith, thank you so much for taking the time to open my eyes to your art.
Thank you.
And the eyes of our listeners, and for letting us take a glimpse into your soul.
Thank you, sir.
You're listening to Jaws of Justice on 90.1 KKFL.
Fellas, I want to go back to an old James Cleveland song that fits the mighty clouds tonight. Out of all our traveling, all of the things we've been through, we're still not tired. Fellas, y'all help me sing just a little bit of this one. Praising the night. Come down, y'all. We were riding along the other day. looking back over our lives, our ups and our downs. We were reminded of the time in Chicago when we had no money and no food to eat. 36 years later, somebody asked me just the other day, Joe, if you had to do it all over again, what would you do? I thought about it a little while and I had to give them an answer. This is what I told them.
I don't.
Check out the poem, The Journey is a Battlefield. No need for batteries in the back, because the growl is written with signature aggression, beauty, style. The bark is a weapon, similar to ammunition, like a modern epic hero. Like a modern epic hero flashing a code to beat the Matrix. Life shouldn't be this hard. But America has a sick thirst for catching bodies, for taking the energy of black people and turning it upside down, maximizing profits to feed the appetites of empire. Sometimes it takes a gritty soul and a divine message to shoot at ghosts that live in the dark, because our flawed lives are meaningless without soldiers to fight with, cry with, laugh with, and die with. They don't know our pain, but they feel the storms when growls turn to bites, when prayers and cricket smiles reach limits. The journey is a battlefield, a hip-hop anthem in the middle of the chest, waiting to break the cage, allowing rage and love to slip from the leash. For more information on this show, make sure to visit www.officialseneca.com.
Hearing my problem, what am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it some way, somehow? Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change